All right, this is Pure Decking show number 225 for Thursday, June the 30th, 2016. This is the show about stuff that interests me, like our current police state, information security, and apparently network troubleshooting that leads me to decide it's time to order new mainboards. I'm Morps. Tonight I am drinking Newcastle Brown Ale, and it is delicious. Madman, what are you drinking?
I'm drinking Angry Orchard's Hard Cider Elder Flower. Because all of my booze has subtitles.
Yeah, normally I only need that with sake. BSV, what are you drinking?
Sadly, currently nothing, but looking at the title of the first discussion, I may have to buy the entire contents of a liquor store to drown myself in.
The show is delayed a little bit tonight because apparently my network card is dying. Tried two different cords, different ports on the switch. The main board in this case has always been somewhat flaky. I had to put a USB 3 adding card in it a long time ago because I was having problems with that. And I was getting some pretty significant packet loss on the wire. I'm doing better on packet loss with Wi-Fi than I am with a wire. That's kind of fucked up. So I'm going to be ordering a mainboard here in the next week or so, probably. Madman, you having any hardware-related issues at the moment?
Not right now. Although the ports for my headset have been finicky, or the headsets I've been buying were finicky. So I've got a USB headset that I use now.
Yeah. How you doing on hardware, BSV? I know you at one point you replaced an entire rig for a VGA cord.
I tried to forget that.
Oh, sorry.
Hardware-wise, haven't had too much problems, but now that I said that, I expect my computer to blow up into smoke any moment now.
It could catch fire.
Well, there's a lot of bolts flying around in there. Lots of spinning bits, a couple of magnetic bits. Well, you may not have magnetic disks, so you could be all SSD. But the power supply in that thing still has a couple of nice high-charged capacitors in there. It needs something to bridge them just right, an arc. And, your computer could explode. Why not?
A couple of really, really drunk crickets, all you need.
Yeah, that was always mildly disturbing when I opened up one of my old file servers.
You had crickets?
Well, half of them.
Peter got hungry. Only 8 bits of the cricket.
I assume they tried to climb in through the fan. It's just kind of like, damn. You know, how fast was the thing going that it made it halfway through before getting chopped? So... anyways, I guess we can go ahead and move on with our first discussion topic here. Well, our discussion topic here. So, I understand why this judge did what he did. The story is from eWeek.com. The headline, "Home computers connected to the internet are not private," court rules. I.e., the judge said you have no expectation of privacy if you are using a computer connected to the internet.
But that now means that nothing connected to the internet has an expectation of privacy? So all hospital files have to be kept sequestered from a network or they're in HIPAA violation. All banks must be kept sequestered from the internet, or they're violating the Gibbs-Bliley Act, the Bank Secrecy Act, Patriot Act, and possibly the Dodd-Frank Act. Because there is no expectation of privacy if your computer is attached to a network.
So... Let me read from the article here a little bit. Of course, the slug line, a judge in Virginia rules that people should have no expectation of privacy on their home PCs, and get this reasoning, because no computer connected computer is immune from invasion. Oh, it could be hacked, therefore it shouldn't be considered private.
So by this logic, everything is private, since I'm pretty sure I can hack down anybody's door in my neighborhood with the axe if I wanted to get into.
You have windows. They're made of glass. They could be busted out, or I could just look through them. Therefore, you should have no expectation of privacy in your bedroom.
You don't have reinforced concrete walls with 2-inch steel plating in it, so I can break through them.
Is that not beautiful reasoning? It's kind of like, holy shit. It could happen.
I don't know about you, but I have act as walls and doorways connecting my computer. They're called firewalls and routers that I expect to be private when I'm on one side of them, just like I'm expected to have privacy when I'm inside my walls.
There you go, applying logic to things. Okay, so let's dig into the article here a little bit, because this is painful. This is like, you know, everybody drank, holy shit.
I just did.
A federal judge in the Eastern District of Virginia has ruled that the use of any computer that connects to the internet should not have an expectation of privacy because the computer security is ineffectual at stopping hackers. In the June 23rd ruling came in one of the many cases resulting from the FBI infiltration of Playpen, a hidden service on the Tor network that has acted as a hub for child exploitation and subsequent prosecution of hundreds of individuals. To identify suspects, the FBI took control of Playpen for 2 weeks and used what it calls a Network Investigative Technique, or NIT, a program that runs on the visitor's computer and identifies their internet access. Such mass hacking using a single warrant has riled privacy and digital rights advocates, but U.S. Senator Senior U.S. District Judge Henry Koch Morgan Jr. upheld the use of the warrant and even stated that the warrant is unnecessary because the type of crime being investigated and because users should have no objectively reasonable expectation of privacy. Even using countermeasures such as the Tor network does not mean the user should expect their location or activities to remain private, according to the judge. It is clear to the court that the defendant took great strides to hide his IP address via the use of the Tor network, the judge wrote in the ruling. However, the court finds that any such subjective expectation of privacy, if one even existed in this case, is not objectively reasonable. So, what this judge has just said is that because of the nature of the crime, he should have had no expectation of privacy. That's kind of interesting. I mean, you know, if you are committing a crime, are you giving up your expectation of privacy?
No. If you're in your house, you have an expectation of privacy. They need a warrant to come in your house, even if you're committing murder. Now, if they hear the blood-curdling screams from the hooker as, you know, bash her head in with a soccer trophy through the wall, that's probable cause, and they can kick in the door to make sure you know the hooker's not dying.
But, you know, Madman, I was about to accuse you of having described this in way too much detail, but I happen to know for a fact that you have never won a soccer trophy, so I know you're not talking about yourself.
Aha! Next time you're in town, I will show you 2 soccer trophies.
One may be slightly dented.
So, all right, Madman firmly blowing right through the out I gave him there.
Right through it. Set the sucker on fire and danced around it. So, the fact that you're committing a crime doesn't remove your expectation of privacy. Otherwise, the idea of probable cause wouldn't exist.
Other courts have found the opposite. The Ninth Circuit, for example, held in 2007 that just connecting a computer to the network does not undermine a user's subjective expectation of privacy and an objectively reasonable expectation of privacy in his personal computer. Yet there has been a dramatic shift in the public's reasonable expectation of privacy because people do not expect to be able to defend their computers against attack, Judge Morgan argued. Hacking is much more prevalent now than it was even 9 years ago, and the rise of computer hacking via the internet has changed the public's reasonable expectations of privacy, the judge wrote. Now it seems unreasonable to think that a computer connected to the web is immune from invasion. Indeed, the opposite holds true. In today's digital world, it appears to be a virtual certainty that computers accessing the internet can and eventually will be hacked. The judge argued that the FBI did not even need the original warrant to use the NIT against visitors to playpen. Wow.
Well, 5,000 years of recorded history has proven to me that walls, reinforced structures, and locked doors do not prevent invasions. So, nobody in anyone's house has any reasonable expectation of privacy, even in the dark depths of NORAD. Because those are only nuclear bomb resistant blast doors, not immune, so we can still force them open.
So I think what's happened here is that this judge really, really wanted to nail the pederast to the wall. And, you know, who can blame him, right? Somebody, you know, looking at kids. Yeah, I'm all for the disemboweling with a spoon. But he was so desperate for a way to do it, because what the FBI did was basically put him in this position, that he's turned around and said, well, fine, if you're on a computer, you have no reasonable expectation of privacy.
But the FBI had a warrant. He didn't need to go that far. He can just say the FBI's warrant was valid. If I'm recalling the case from earlier, isn't this the one where they're arguing that the judge that initially issued the warrant didn't have standing to issue the warrant?
Yes.
Yeah.
The argument is,
it's a way of nixing that entire argument, I think.
Well, a better way of nixing the argument is the internet is running through that judge's jurisdiction. So that judge has jurisdiction over the internet. He can issue a warrant. I'm fine with saying we don't know where every computer is on the internet, because you don't. I could bounce a connection through how many ever servers. Well, actually, I can't without looking up how to do it. But I can have Morps bounce a few connections for me through a dozen different servers over how many ever continents. And it'll take you forever to find out where I am. But you know I have a computer.
It's not that hard.
You know I'm on the internet. So a judge somewhere can say, hey, this computer on the internet, you have a warrant for it. Bam. Problem solved. You don't have to say no one has an expectation of privacy. You just say, we have jurisdiction to issue a warrant. Here's our reasoning. It's on the internet. I live in this town. This town has the internet. The internet is subject to my ruling.
There's a problem with that, and that saying that I can subject anything on the internet to my local laws has some interesting applications if you're going to, say, Middle Eastern countries. The European Union has put out some interesting anti-hate laws.
What's awesome about that? A warrant is only valid in areas where you can uphold it. The Fifth Circuit Court of something up my ass can issue a warrant for the deuce the body of has not been laid in What the Fuckistan. And if What the Fuckistan doesn't want to participate or cooperate with the warrant, your warrant is worthless. So issuing a warrant by a U.S. court assumes that it is within the U.S.'s grasp to enforce it. They can issue a warrant.
They extradited that guy from Britain for piracy.
And apparently it was within their jurisdiction to enforce it. They enforced it. Now, Britain should have said, go fuck yourself, or Sweden, or whatever country we abducted his ass from. But they didn't.
So, there's that. But yeah, what this judge just did is nuts. And I'm sure it's going to get appealed. But, let's see, the EFF, Digital Rights Group, warned the ruling is far outside any current legal notion of privacy. The group expects that the law enforcement will begin using the ruling unless it is overturned. The Justice Department has a practice of carving out novel legal interpretations, then advancing them in court, Andrew Crocker, staff attorney for the EFF, told eWeek. We would not be surprised if they did not try to rely on the idea that they don't need a warrant for this type of hacking. Few people who will have sympathy for the defendant, a man who allegedly visited Playpen and downloaded images from the site, but the precedents in the case could affect everyone, the EFF said, which is why we're talking about it. Because if it was just a case of a pederast getting nailed to the wall, then we might point and laugh, and that'd be about the end of it. The decision underscores a broader trend in these cases, the group states in the blog post. Courts across the country, faced with unfamiliar technology and unsympathetic defendants, are issuing decisions that threaten everyone's rights. And, yeah, the judge saying, well, everyone thinks their computer's hackable now is a willful misunderstanding of how people feel about their computers. If that was the case, you know, antivirus companies would be out of business. I wouldn't have a job because everyone would just give up and stop using the internet.
Or they would just write in, we could lose this much money tomorrow. We have to figure that into our line item costs.
Yeah.
We'll call it the internet may fuck you over line.
But
we'll come up with an acronym.
Yeah, when you look at that line, I'm fairly certain that if you were to look at that line, most companies would say, "Yeah, we're just going to disconnect from the internet," which you can't even do if you want to be competitive this day and age. So. Yeah, that's just an amazing lack of understanding on that judge's part, and he's probably reading a statement somebody gave him.
He just wants to nail a pederast, which I'm all for. I think the judge is completely in the right on that one. But he's fucking the pederast in such a way that he's also fucking me, and I'm not getting a reach around in this situation, so he's wrong.
So, I was kind of hoping we'd have Static around, because he would, I know he's traveling, though, but I figured he might at least give us a dissenting point of view, because I don't, like I said, I understand where the judge is coming from. He's just, you know, here's a pedophile, the FBI says he's bad, let's get this guy, and... You know, somebody probably said, ooh, here's a way to do this. You can read this. And then the Justice Department is sitting there going, oh, hell yes. He just said we don't need warrants to hack computers. Now, he's a Virginia judge, so does that apply outside of Virginia?
He's a district court judge.
Oh,
it applies to any district, in any state that is in that district. And
yeah.
States outside of that district can cite this as legal precedent. So, I think it said the 15th Circuit, but I don't really care the number. We're going to pick on the 9th Circuit because they're all morons anyway. The 9th Circuit can say, well, this judge in Virginia huffed so many paint fumes and came up with this. And we want to say that applies here too. There's precedent. Let's do it.
Yeah. So, that's not cool. What the hell? Interesting. I'm getting some strange notices on my phone.
The issue I'm having is the feds had a warrant. So saying you don't need a warrant isn't necessary. The feds had one.
Ah, I am getting... I just got a whole bunch of private messages on Reddit. One of which is Trinary Bit, who sent me this exact story. To be fair, I had not seen my Reddit messages, so but he sent it to me apparently 2 hours ago. So Trinary Bit, yeah, I did get it. Apparently, yeah, the Reddit app on my phone decided it was time to deliver like 12 messages. Anyways,
well, belated weird. Thank you for the story, Trinary Bit.
Yeah,
great minds,
it's horrible.
Apparently think a lot. I like it.
So that's I am 99% positive that is going to get overturned because no legal scholar is going to look at that and go, "How am I what now?" When it comes to how privacy is defined, because
even
the,
with
the justification that but your computer could be hacked is such a blatant kick in the face.
Well, the big problem is it's now made every hospital non-compliant with a lot of healthcare regulations. We're supposed to digitize all of our files now, and they still have to be secure. So by this judge saying they're not secure, the judge is saying, fuck you, HIPAA. Let's just start finding them. No, he didn't think about it, and I doubt anyone's going to apply it that way because laws are selectively and selectively applied, which is one reason they suck and one reason rulings suck.
So, anyways, yeah, that's we're all pretty much in agreement that this is terrible and that this, I hope this gets overturned. I hope they appeal it and get it overturned because you're right, all you had to do is just declare the warrant is valid, and especially if the warrant, if you're like, well, this guy's in the right jurisdiction for that warrant to apply for anything outside of, the internet, then what's the problem? So,
I think the problem was the actual physical location of the computer wasn't in the judge's jurisdiction that initiated the warrant. That's why I'm open to expanding a judge's jurisdiction on what warrants they can issue, especially when it comes to something like the internet, where you literally don't know where anyone is.
Well,
I could be down the street. I could be across the world.
It's not quite that. But you can look up geographic maps for IP addresses. But, yeah, if they're using Tor or something, absolutely. But here's the thing with that is I feel like the way it should work is you could issue the warrant until you've determined the location of the computer, at which point it should be passed off to the, whatever jurisdiction for where the computer is, if it's not yours. And the reason I say that is because I don't want judges in Virginia issuing warrants for me in Tennessee or people in Texas or California. I kind of feel like that's going to get abused very, very quickly.
Virginia already has reciprocity with all the states that you've just said. So if Virginia issued a warrant for you, they couldn't send the Virginia State Police to pick you up. But what they do is they call California or Tennessee or Texas or whatever state you're in. Say, hey, guess who has a warrant in our state? We would like him extradited. Can you please arrest him?
Right, and I'm fine with that. I'm saying I don't like the idea of them knowing that it's in, kind of abusing the system, you know what I mean? Of saying, well, we know that this person's, I don't know, in Puerto Rico. And
you don't want them to judge shop for a friendly judge outside of
the
jurisdiction if they know what jurisdiction they're in.
Yeah, they're going to go find the judge who completely agrees with them and won't give you a chance. And yeah, so that and it's if from the way that got ruled, it sounds like they judge shopped already. So, anyways, let's move on to the regular news stories here. First one up is from thepeak.ca, although I saw the variations on the story in a few other places. YouTube has updated their harassment and cyberbullying policy. They are defining harassment as deliberately posting content in order to humiliate someone, and here's the kicker, making hurtful and negative comments or videos about another person. You know, hurtful and negative.
What if I'm critiquing them?
Well,
but they could take it as hurtful.
So the article goes on talking about how channels are going to get themselves shut down and take, you know, no takedown notices have been filed yet, and they specifically do the Fine Brothers reaction videos. That's the example they use. I don't really care about their examples because I can talk about the policy. But so here's the thing. YouTube is, of course, a Google. So they're automated. The way it works is that you get enough reports against a video, they'll take it down, and then they might eventually get around to actually having somebody review it, right? So a system like this could work if everyone played fair. The problem is that the SJW types and you know, the political activist types, they tend not to play fair. They tend to report videos that actually don't have anything wrong with them, claiming they're harassment, or, you know, try to get things pulled under fake copyright. And, yeah, you know, you're going to have people who try to abuse this system, and that's the real problem.
The current systems for takedown stuff are just copyright laws. So many companies have automated systems that just go in and mark stuff that may contain the content.
Well, yeah. So you have to. I've been on both sides of that, and if you're trying to protect copyright on something, the internet's a big place, and so you have to automate, and you have to, you know, the content ID system is a little bit aggressive, but YouTube is doing that so they don't get sued into the ground, and they have to show that they're making a good faith effort, and of course the companies that are going to be the ones doing the suing have made that difficult, which is why you see the system set up the way it is and abused the way it is. But I'm kind of, you know, I know that they just made that EU agreement, and I'm sure this is part of it, but they've defined it so broadly that even if somebody is abusing the system, I'm not certain that you could say that it's really abuse of the system, because all they have to do is say, well, I found your comments hurtful. You know?
Well, this isn't copyright. It shouldn't be protected.
No,
free speech exists.
It shouldn't.
If I walk up and say, you're a vapid cunt and a waste of human space and should be doused with gasoline and set on fire, you just look at me and say I'm a flaming sack of pricks and walk away. Or ignore me. It's the internet. You don't have to hear what I say.
Now, to be fair, Madman, I was going to suggest that we, you know, simply beat you over the head and feed you to a pig farm as opposed to, you know, calling you a sack of pricks. But I just want you to make sure you have your insults correct. That said, yeah, this is obviously with their agreement with the EU that we talked about a couple weeks ago, and it's so ripe for abuse, and that's what's going to happen. I mean,
only the most offended can say what they want.
Yeah,
but you just become more offended than the next person.
You mean laws and rules set up based off of people's feelings can be easily abused?
And are a bad idea. Yes, that's exactly what I'm saying.
Grow a thicker skin or unplug your Ethernet cord.
So, yeah, exactly. This is, I mean, it's silly, but that's what they've made their policy. So, this is one of the reasons why we don't do pure decking on YouTube. I've explored doing YouTube videos before. I'd like to get into it at some point. The pure decking content, the G15 content, IHN, you'll never see it on YouTube because it wouldn't survive for 5 minutes.
Oh, yeah, the whole mark out, here's our first racist comment.
We actually made it fairly far in the show this week before.
I technically haven't made one yet. They're just pointing out that's a game we've done before.
Yeah, I mean, it's usually like, but I mean, we usually have said something about, you know, within 5 minutes. that would just have all the Tumblr arenas, you know, losing their mind and reporting the channel over and over and over again. You know, and the fact that I call them SJWs and Tumblr arenas. What copyrights are preventing us from making
new YouTubes?
I'm sorry, Madman, what'd you say?
I wonder what copyrights are preventing us from making a new YouTube.
Nothing. It's momentum and the size of it at this point. That and the fact that if you try to set up a YouTube without censorship, it would very quickly become a porn site.
Damn it. You're right. And I just want a YouTube where people can say anything.
Galaxy15radio.com. If I had a way to... I have the way. It's if I had the time to build it, I've thought it would be fun to rework G15 into kind of like a SoundCloud-style thing. To build the interface right in the website to do shows and whatever. But I'm worried it'd get abused. I don't even have forums or let comments on the current site because... Well, actually, in my case, it's a security issue because I know what code injection is and I just didn't want to deal with it. But, audio-only stuff, I mean, hell, most of the YouTube videos that get people all riled up is somebody sitting there talking into a webcam. And unless it's a cute chick, I don't really want to sit there and watch some dude talk. You know what I mean?
Yeah. That's why Sargod uses pictures.
Yeah.
And yeah, here's the story. Guys do that.
So, anyways, moving on. Next story is from the Next Web. Google funded $300 million to put a 60 terabit Trans-Pacific cable. I believe it's already gone live. Google's $300 million Trans-Pacific faster cable is ready to use. And like I said, I think at this point it's actually gone up. It's actually started. The cable, first announced 1 year ago, brings 60 terabit per second internet speeds between Japan and the United States. The cable will surface in Oregon and two posts in Japan, China, and my prefectures. From those points, the cable will provide major service to major cities. Stateside, Los Angeles, the San Francisco Bay Area, Portland, and Seattle will benefit from faster. From the very beginning of the project, we repeatedly said to each other, faster, 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 and at one point it became the project name, and today it's a reality. Blah, 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 blah. It's six times faster than the current fiber optic cable that they have dredged along a similar route. It's interesting that Google is directly funding new internet infrastructure between us and Asia.
They have the cash for it.
Yeah, they do that.
And
I'm not saying it's a bad thing that they're doing it. I think it's cool. Interesting.
Well, seeing that their business pretty much covers a large chunk of the internet, probably a lot in their interest to make sure the infrastructure runs well.
Absolutely. And like I said, I mean, it's they're making an internet cable. They've already said it's just going to become part of the internet backbone. It's not a private line, or they're not leasing service out. So now they're already acting as an ISP through their fiber system, so it's not all that strange. But yeah, it's just kind of like Google is really shelling out some money for infrastructure. So I guess they're going to own the internet at some point. Is that where this is going?
Well, I kind of think that's the way the internet should be. If you're going to be dumping out the content, you put the money up for the road. So I can see system. If you're going to be using the big rigs on it, cars didn't need the highway system. Charge the shipping companies for building it.
Yeah, that's cool. So I don't really have that much to say about it other than just I think it's kind of cool. And I like seeing... just as a for example of why I think this is kind of cool, I'm fairly certain RU's connection to us is routed through Asia.
Yeah. So
hopefully he'll get better ping.
Nice. 60 times better ping. You can play a first person shooter and aim the reticle at the guy you're trying to shoot, are you?
All right, next article is from Ars Technica. And, see, I'm kind of blowing right through these, but that's okay. Windows 10 will soon be easier to reject. Microsoft is finally ending the malware-like trickery of the Get Windows 10 upgrade offer that has shown Windows 7 and 8 users. Mary Jo Foley reports that a clearer upgrade promotion will roll out this week. It will have three options: upgrade now, choose a time, or decline the free offer, with the last of these options dismissing the update altogether. Critically, pressing the X in the corner will have the same effect as the decline option, as opposed to automatically scheduling the update, which is what it's been doing for the past couple of months. This change addresses one of the most unpleasant features of the promotion. Some weeks ago, Microsoft changed the behavior of the X button to make it simply defer the upgrade rather than decline it altogether. This behavior was contrary to any reasonable expectations Windows users might have, and contrary to the way the promotion behaved at its introduction. Microsoft's statement on the change, attributable to Terry Merson, Executive Vice President of the Windows and Devices Group, reads, "One of the most important priorities for Windows 10 is for everyone to love Windows." Oh my god. Anyways, everyone has to love Windows. Stare into the spinning, into the hypno disk. Take your drugs.
On this one, it's not a hypno disk. If you're putting out a product, you want people to love the product.
No,
make it better so they do love it.
It's just the way he said it. It's very, very hail corporate. Anyways, since we introduced new upgrade experience for Windows 10, we received feedback that some of our valued customers found it confusing.
Like the people streaming live suddenly getting updated.
We've been working hard to incorporate their feedback, and this week we've rolled out a new upgrade experience with clear options to upgrade now, schedule a time, or decline the free offer. The red X at the top corner of the dialog box now simply dismisses the reminder and will not initiate the upgrade. We'll continue to be led by your feedback, and always earning and maintaining your trust is our commitment and priority. We recommend people upgrade to Windows 10 as it's the most secure version of Windows, and take advantage of the free upgrade before it ends on July 29th. The company will also offer free tech support and assistance for rolling back to Windows 7 or 8. So, here's the thing. Anybody who is going to get bit by this automatic upgrade behavior has now been automatically upgraded to Windows 10. They're either so mad at it that they're getting themselves rolled back, or they're just dealing with it. I know this because it happened to several family members of mine. I was on half the time on my vacation, I was on a along with family dealing with that. And there's even that woman that won like $10,000 settlement against Microsoft. I think Microsoft had just determined it was cheaper to pay her than it was to pay their lawyers, but claiming she lost significant business because her computers were down because they were all upgrading to Windows 10. But I mean,
the $10,000, yeah, it was cheaper to pay her than the lawyer.
Yeah, I think that's what really happened there, which is why I didn't really talk about the story other than just now. But, it's just like everyone who's gotten bit by that auto-upgrade bit, is they've either already upgraded or they're running, like, the GWX control panel, or they're not going to get automatically upgraded to Windows 10 at this point. So, of course, they're now going to put the option in to decline it cleanly.
I'm kind of surprised they're doing away with the free offer. I thought the entire objective was to get everyone on Windows 10.
Well, that's the weird part, and I keep wondering if that's actually going to happen, or if they're going to just keep extending it, you know? Like on the day before the offer, due to such interest and promotion, we've decided to extend it another 6 months, and then 6 months from now they do it again, and I think they're putting a deadline on it to try to get people to go to it, and then they're going to extend it again because they had a target of like 1 billion devices they were trying to reach. So, since they're at 250,000, they don't think they're going to reach it, but whatever.
If I'm recalling, they're trying to go the subscription route.
I think that's eventually where they want to go.
Subscription?
Yeah, you pay a monthly fee for your OS.
This is sort of like what Adobe's doing with the Creative Cloud, And there's a few other companies doing their software that way, that as opposed to, you know, paying for it up front, they want you paying, I don't know, $20 a month, or I think Adobe's like $50 a month. But since their entire creative suite, if you just go buy it, is like $3,000, I can see the $50 a month being the more attractive option, especially if you don't have $3,000 to throw at it. But, you know, after a while, you figure out that it's costing you more for the subscription than it would have been just buy it. But I mean, there's a lot of
software doing that nowadays. Have a cash flow problem.
But yeah, they want you continually paying to use the software as opposed to just buying it once. Which, actually, if you've ever done software development, you understand the desire for that, because it kind of sucks if you put a whole bunch of time into making a program, put it out there, and then, you know, you sell it, and then everyone you sold it to is expecting patches and upgrades and support. And, you know, if nobody else is buying it anymore to support that, how do you pay your developers to keep doing it? So I understand the business need, but at the same time, my wallet has other opinions.
I don't see the subscription fee as being a good model. I see you sell the product, and then you sell servicing the product separately.
Well, that's kind of the Linux model, except the whole selling the product in the first place.
Yeah, because I can see I bought Windows whatever, and so long as they're putting everything they can into it the first time, it's a quality product. I know that somebody...
See, there's your bad assumption right there.
I'm still an optimist, no matter how much you try to bring me down. So they're putting their best product forward. This is the gold standard of what they could make at the time. And then 8 months later, they find some malware that found a vulnerability that no one foresaw, and they need to patch it. Okay. Developing the patch is additional work, and it's not something I bought initially. Sell me the patch or sell me a service plan for how many ever years or months or whatever. But I think if I buy something, I own it. My biggest problem with Steam is I can't give you my game that I haven't played in 2 years. It's mine. I should be able to give it away.
Well, you can buy games for other people, but yeah, you're right. I think once you've activated on your account, that's it.
Once I activated it, it's mine. And I had a problem of I borrowed someone's laptop because of reason. I don't even remember why. I think it was before I bought the laptop
I had.
Oh, we were
at a LAN party. I gave you a copy of UT3. And you activated it on somebody else's account. I remember that.
I installed it from the disk on someone else's machine and played it from the disk. I mean, didn't log in to Steam, but their Steam was open, so it registered it to their Steam account.
Yeah, I remember that.
That's messed up. And even with that aside, I beat Limbo a while back before it was free. Why couldn't I have given it to you? Fine. I paid somebody cash for it.
Yeah. I don't disagree with the concept. Mm-hmm. I just also understand why they're not doing it.
Well, that's the only reason I've been moving towards I don't care if people pirate, because if a company isn't going to respect my property rights, why should I respect theirs?
Oh, I've never cared if you pirate or not. It's the only reason I've ever said don't pirate is because usually pirated software is so full of viruses and malware and shit that it's not worth the trouble.
I honestly have for a long time saw it as theft. You are stealing something. Now, I don't think it's worth what people are being fined for, because I'm watching a movie. I've stolen the price of a movie. I haven't stolen $50,000 worth of shit. So you can say I've either stolen the price of a movie ticket or the price of the DVD, if I've downloaded or streamed it or whatever.
I think if you're downloading it, the cost of the DVD is probably fair.
But if they're not going to respect my right to give away something I bought or resell something I bought, why should I respect their right to charge me money?
Yeah. So speaking of piracy, next article is from Torrent Freak. judge dismisses movie piracy case, claiming the IP address doesn't prove anything.
And he's right.
Well, it's even better if you read the story. For more than half a decade, so-called copyright trolling cases have been keeping the U.S. judicial system busy. While new cases are still filed every week, there are signs that some judges are growing tired of the practice and are increasingly skeptical about the claims made by copyright holders. In the Oregon District Court, Magistrate Judge Stacy Beckerman recently recommended dismissal of a complaint filed by the makers of the Adam Sandler movie, The Cobbler. Cobbler. I'm terrible. I don't even know what movie that is.
Direct to DVD?
Nah.
Or direct to Netflix? I've seen it on Netflix.
It was on Netflix.
I didn't watch it, but I saw that it existed.
Something about him gaining the ability to turn into people by wearing their shoes.
That it was Adam Sandler, and honestly, for the most part, he plays the same character in whatever movie, and I know a lot of actors do that, but I don't care for the character he plays. It's funny once or twice, but you've seen.
According to the judge, both claims of direct and indirect infringement were not sufficient to continue the case. What's unique in this case is the direct infringement claims were dismissed sua sponte, which hasn't happened before. To prove direct infringement, copyright holders merely have to make it plausible that a defendant, Thomas Gonzalez in this case, is indeed the copyright infringer. This is traditionally done by pointing out the IP address is directly linked to the defendant's internet connection, for example. However, according to Judge Beckerman, that's not enough. The only facts plaintiff pleads in support of its allegation that Gonzalez is the infringer is that he is the subscriber of the IP address used to download or distribute the movie, and that he was sent notices of infringing activity to which he did not respond. That is not enough, she writes in her recommendation. The plaintiff has not alleged any specific facts tying Gonzalez to the infringing conduct. While it is possible that the subscriber is also the person who downloaded the movie, it's possible that a family member, resident of the household, or an unknown person engaged in the infringing conduct. And that an outsider could be the pirate is not unlikely. The defendant operates an adult foster care home where several people had access to the internet. The filmmakers were aware of this, and during a hearing, their counsel admitted that any guest could have downloaded the film. To gather more information, the filmmakers were allowed to depose Gonzalez, but this didn't result in any additional evidence. Nevertheless, they amended the complaint to name Gonzalez as the defendant, which is not correct, according to Judge Beckerman. Based on the facts alleged in the first amended complaint, Gonzalez is but one of many possible infringers, and the plaintiff's allegations that Gonzalez is the infringer is just a guess. Plausible does not mean certain, but it does mean likely. And the plaintiff has not pled sufficient facts to support its allegation that Gonzalez is the likely infringer here. Accordingly, the district judge should dismiss the plaintiff's claim for copyright infringement. Filmmakers also tried to hold Gonzalez accountable for the infringements of others through his connections, but the judge concluded that the claim of indirect copyright infringement doesn't hold up here either. In March, Beckerman recommended dismissing the claims for both direct and indirect copyright infringement, a conclusion District Court Judge Anna Brown adopted earlier this month. The court agrees with the magistrate judge that the plaintiff has failed to allege sufficient facts to state a plausible claim tending to exclude the possibility that an alternative or alternative explanation is true. While not all judges across the country may come to the same conclusion, the ruling offers hope to defendants who are in a similar position. Suing alleged BitTorrent pirates is still an option, but increasingly judges demand additional proof. I think this is less about judges starting to understand how technology works, and more about they're just getting tired of the system being abused by DMCA mafiosos.
And to truly understand how cool this ruling is, you look up what sua sponte means. It means she issued this ruling without the defense asking. Normally, this is a motion that a defense attorney would bring. The judge just looked at the case and pretty much did the defense's job for them because she disliked it so much.
Just looked at it and said, you don't have enough evidence for this.
Yes, instead of waiting for a defense attorney to bring the motion, the judge did it on her own.
That's cool. And I like it that they are starting to ask for a little bit more than just an IP address and a timestamp. Because, I know when I'm doing investigations, I look for a hell of a lot more than an IP address and a timestamp. Sometimes that's all you find to go on, true. But I usually like to at least get a user agent and maybe a little bit more to prove what's going on. I really like it when I can figure out who was logged into a specific system. That's always nice. But
is there a way to actually find that? Because most people don't set up login credentials on their home PC.
Yes and no. But it would be a lot more work. So your average internet user is not just running BitTorrent. They're also going to be signed into Facebook or YouTube or at least an email address. They might be on an instant messenger. They might be on a TeamSpeak server, maybe a public TeamSpeak server or even an IRC. So now I bounce my IP through a VPN most of the time. I've actually got that turned off right now while I was trying to troubleshoot what turns out to be a problem with my main rig and not any of my network gear, which that's actually kind of a relief. Because I thought something was really wrong with my network set up there for a bit. But anyways, I just completely brain farted.
Oh, we're trying to figure out, I asked if there a way to actually prove is that a PC and a home connection.
What you would have to do is find some other corroborating use of that IP address. Whether that's they're signed in to an email account that you can compare that IP from, or they're on maybe a Facebook or a YouTube, and you could somehow get the logs from that. You could then corroborate that, yes, the person who owns this media account was on this IP address, and this IP address was also sharing a movie. That, that way you can say, is this your Facebook account? Yes, no. And well, we see that your Facebook account was connected from the same IP as this movie. Now, the problem with that is if you know anything about how NAT routers work, you might see three or four different people signed into Facebook, from the same IP. Especially if you have a lot of people in the house.
You can move into a ponderative evidence, though. It's like, well, this computer had you logged into Facebook, and it's your account, and maybe you signed into, Gmail.
Right, so you would need to collect a lot of data, and of course, Facebook and Google don't want to give up their logs to the DMCA trolls. So, there goes that. Not without subpoenas, anyways. Really, what they would have to do is they would need to get onto your computer, the computer that you own, right? Something that you could claim is a device they own, and have the file sitting there, in the downloads folder. So, if you have the collection of movies that you've downloaded, they would have to actually get on the computer and find it and prove it, and that's a difficult thing to ask a judge to do in a civil case.
I swear, I was just archiving Netflix in case one of their warehouses burned down, Your Honor.
All right, next story up is from Ars Technica. The federal government is taking another step it says would make the U.S. homeland safer from terrorism. U.S. border authorities are proposing that millions of tourists entering the country each year reveal their social media identities. The proposal from U.S. Customs and Border Protection, announced last week in the Federal Register, would add a line to the online or paper form that U.S.-bound visitors must fill out if they don't have a visa and plan on staying for up to 90 days for vacation, business or other affairs. The agency says travelers coming to the U.S. under the visa waiver program won't be forced to disclose their social media handles, but leaving it blank could obviously raise red flags. We're not going to force you, but if you don't answer, we're probably not going to let you in.
So we'll never see you in the U.S. again if this goes through.
Not seeing a big issue with it.
Here's what would be asked. Please enter information associated with your online presence, provider, platform, social media identifier. They want your screen name. This field doesn't call for additional information, such as passwords, but it's likely to yield many if applicants aren't paying attention and overshare. They're hoping people accidentally put their passwords on the form.
Just leave an extra blank field next to the username.
You know, that shit would work for a lot of people.
I'm not sure how effective it'll be, because you can always have more than one social network presence, and I believe it's suggested in college now, just so you have the social network for your resume, and then the social network where you're posting beer pong photos.
I've been suggesting this for years. But yeah, I mean, how hard is it for, what's your social media name? Alex Jones. I mean, you know, no, that's not your name. How do you know? I can do a raspy voice. I mean, you know, come on.
I'm not the Alex Jones, but I'm Alex Jones.
You know, I mean, that's the point. You know, how do you prevent people from lying on that form about that?
You don't.
You know, what's your Twitter handle? I don't know. Go find some porn star and put the Twitter handle down. I mean,
it's going to catch stupid people.
Yeah. It'll be an optional data field to request social media identifiers and will be used for vetting purposes, such as well as applicant contact information, the government said, and the Federal Register. Collecting social media data will enhance the existing investigative process and provide DHS greater clarity and visibility to possibly nefarious activity and connections to... Okay, if somebody's a cat, no. Stop that. I have enough problems with my Ethernet cords. Leave them alone. That's attacking the damn router. Anyways, if somebody's got a fucking ISIS Twitter account, are they really going to put it down on the form?
I don't know if they're going to put it down on the form, but the San Bernardino attack could have easily been prevented if the FBI wasn't ordered not to look at social media presence of people applying for visa passports at the time.
Well, that's true.
The chick's wife that he brought in was an open ISIS supporter on Facebook. It was shared. It was public. You wouldn't even needed a warrant. Didn't need to be her friend to see it. She was an avid jihadi, and the FBI didn't bother to look at what was publicly available. They were actively ordered not to, because it's racist.
And also, just for the effectivity of what this probably would do, just look at how many Facebooks and all that people have where they openly post pictures of them doing illegal acts.
That's true too. So it's probably going to be a lot more effective than I would give it credit for. Yeah, I don't really care that they're asking for it. I mean, I could see the privacy implications there, but it's so easy to just lie, or, you know, to have the resume account that you don't care that they look at. I don't see it as being particularly effective, but...
I could see the effectiveness of it being in question, but I don't even see it as a privacy issue. And
it's not like they're asking you for the password, and, you know, worst case scenario... What do you say? I don't have one.
Yeah, so. And what people keep saying is they're throwing the constitutionality of forcing people to release this. They're not citizens.
No, they I wasn't going to argue that. Rights. That's why they're why they're doing it at border control.
We can put whatever restrictions we want on anyone coming in.
Yeah. No, I know that. It's interesting that they've kind of surprised that it took them this long to start trying to track people's online handles.
Oh, I'm not joking. The Department of Homeland Security, right up to San Bernardino, was actively ordered not to look at social media. It took a bunch of people pissing a fit for this to be rescinded. So it's that the FBI looked at it, they were told to stop.
That's weird to me. You would think that would... I mean... the way the FBI went after people in the 80s, I figured they'd have a database of everybody's handles and real names somewhere.
They may have, and they may have been removed. Yeah. Right up through the 2000s, when the Department of Homeland Security was being set up, the FBI... and the NSA were compiling lists of names of possible terrorists, and a database, and that was ordered shut down and deleted with the new administration because it was racist. And he was just claiming they were going after people because they were Muslim. Wasn't looking at, well, most of our terrorist attacks right now were Muslim. And the database, to the administration's credit, was heavily Muslim. But they did have some NRA and some other active terror groups listed in it. It's just that the ones that have hit us and most of the ones that we're focusing on, they had an Islamist bend because that's what we're looking at at the time.
They were also the most active.
Yeah, so they may have done this in the past and it was just removed and now they're rebuilding.
Yeah. Well, it's like I said, it's interesting. So
I'm just worried that it's going to create the haystack to put another needle in, because there is such a thing as too much collection of data. If you have so much data that it's not useful, then you've wasted resources.
Oh, good God. What did the cat just knock over? He's been getting worse here lately. I don't know what the hell's going on.
Am I kind of incorrect in that assertion?
Well, it's no, but at the same time, that if they're vetting people, if they're actively using it to vet people, and you have something distasteful in your social media, that's incentive to lie. Which, you know, I guess if you're going to lie to get in, you're going to lie to get in anyways. But, you know, the big problem with data, huge amounts of data, is not so much accessing it, it's storing it. I mean, modern database schemes, it's not a problem just to punch in the handle and see if you know who they are, right? The problem comes in that when you have terabytes and terabytes of data, it, you know, sure, searching it's kind of a pain in the butt, but it's maintaining it. You know, one of the reasons, you know, we've had the immigration system shut down because their Oracle systems couldn't handle the amount of crap they were throwing at it, and they're not unified. The government systems are classically disparate among the different agencies and departments, so even correlating the data across these things is insane, because you have, you know, it requires so much translation that they have entire data centers that are doing nothing but just managing this data and making it so one system can talk to another because it's so crazy. So it's a mismanaged mess, and I think this is just going to add to it. But I don't know. I'm kind of surprised they're not doing it already, but I'm also kind of surprised they're just blatantly asking for it. So, anyways, let's move on here. Last story I have for tonight is from news.yale.edu. Researchers at Yale have developed a new technology that could make energy from low-temperature wasted heat produced by industrial sources at power plants tapping into a widely available and mostly unused resource. They're talking about excess heat from machines, and I think data centers are actually a fantastic source of this as well. By the way, anybody who's ever been in a data center knows how much heat these the server racks can pump out. It is estimated that recoverable waste heat in the U.S. alone could power tens of millions of homes, although existing technologies can reuse high-temperature heat or convert it to electricity. It's difficult to efficiently extract energy from low-temperature heat waste due to small temperature difference between the plant's heat discharge and the surrounding environment. Additionally, conventional systems are designed to target a specific temperature difference, so they're less effective when there are fluctuations in the output of waste heat. Researchers at Yale's Department of Chemical and Environmental Engineering have developed a new technology that overcomes these challenges. The key is a nano bubble. Quit it! Get out! Get out!
Now that Morps' cat has been killed, knowing that he's a cat lover and probably wants a new one, you can email him a cat at morps@galaxy15.com.
I don't think cats travel well through the email.
I don't know. Shove him hard enough to the port in the wall, he might go through.
I think that's what happened to the cockroaches talking about earlier.
Well, cats do usually defy the laws of physics, so... Okay. Researchers at Yale's Department of Chemical and Environmental Engineering have developed a new technology that overcomes these challenges. The key is a nanobubble membrane that traps tiny air bubbles within its pores when immersed in water. Heating one side of the membrane causes the water to evaporate, travel across the air gap, and condense on the other side of the membrane. This temperature-driven flow of water across the membrane is then directed into a turbine to generate electricity. So what they've done is they've got a membrane that causes minor temperature differences to make water flow. And using that water flow, they can then turn turbines. So waste heat from plants and data centers and all this other stuff could be captured and used to generate more electricity from the waste heat.
That's cool. And then we just need to stick it in a battery until they're using it at hours and start sucking the battery dry.
Basically. So. Anyways. So let's go ahead and move on to this. Yo! Alright, all I have to wrap things up with Digital Dojo tonight is Google has put out a new service called My Activity. And this is interesting because basically Google is opening up their database of all the crap they've been tracking about you for years. You can log into your, if you did things associated with your Google account, this shows it. So like I logged in and checked mine, and it's got some YouTube videos I watched 5 years ago. You know, you forget you're signed into Gmail, open up YouTube, and it goes, oh, well, we've got a Google account now, and it's got, you know, videos and shit in it, and you can delete them. I'm not certain that it actually deletes them, but it certainly makes it so you can't see them. But, yeah, so if you're trying to find shit that you watch, or you have a very active YouTube account, or if you're just curious about what all Google has been tracking on you, can see it.
I'm about to see what they've been watching me watch.
It's interesting. It had more on it than I was expecting it to have. Let me put it that way.
They know I'm a libertarian and possibly a right winger with a gun. And I like classic rock. Heavy metal. Nothing too harmful there.
So, just interesting. It's they say you can go in and delete stuff. Like I said, it's Google, so I wonder if they're actually deleting stuff from your profile or if they're just noting that you wanted to hide this activity.
Don't let anyone know that he faps at midnight.
Anyways, that's all I got for tonight. Listen to the stream. We're always working on it. Pure Decking every Thursday. Galaxy 15 radio site, the Twitter handle, the feedback form that hasn't worked for half a year, and the subreddit, which is probably the best way to get a hold of me at this point. I had some ideas for the website, but I'm not exactly sure what I want to pursue with it, so if anybody has any really good ideas of where we should be taking the station, I'm game. I'm kind of open at this point. So as long as it's not going to require me to spend years programming. Madman, you got anything to throw out before I close out the show?
August 27th, I was watching a speech on feminism at Rutgers.
BSV.
I don't know. I just am curious on how much it'll cost to wire up a 60 terabyte cable to my house.
Probably not as much as it costs to drag one across the ocean.
This is something I have to share with the world because I've just been reminded of it and it's hilarious. England bans its own flag to avoid offending Muslims.
What?
I learned that on April 27th and then was reminded of it today. Thank you, Google.
All right, that's it. We're done.